Welcome to Manager Tools. The myth of the feedback myth, part 2 of 3. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. How do I counteract pushback on feedback? What should I do when performance reviews and feedback are discussed? Why is feedback under attack? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
Is there a better way to celebrate International Left-Handers Day than by joining us in Denver to become a more effective manager? If there is, I can't think of one. While you're there, you might as well stick around and become an effective communicator as well. August 13th and 14th, we'll be in Denver. Register today at manager-tools.com/training.
Last week, Mark, we talked about performance reviews and of course, they're not primarily about feedback, which some people think it is. Talked a little bit about feedback. And so today we're going to not quite wrap a bow on it, but talk about the fact that you need performance reviews, you need feedback. In fact, you need both of them. They serve different purposes, but you need them both.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is so often when we talk about one, we end up talking about the other. And I used to kind of roll my eyes like, okay, you want to mention apples and airplanes, fine. but I mean, they're not really categorically near one another. But I finally realized that I was the one that was wrong, that really people really do think that they're both, I mean, they're interchangeable, or hey, if you do one, you don't have to do the other, or vice versa, or one can be casual and the other one can be formal. And yeah, no, performance reviews were never intended to be feedback vehicles. And so if a performance review is not a feedback vehicle, whether or not you deliver it to a person, I don't really care. I could see where you would. But interestingly, nobody ever asks me, should we do succession planning privately? And my response would be, sure, if you want to. And in which case, you probably need a document for that. You could probably use a review, but you'd need a copy of the review. And then you'd talk about who's ready now and who's ready next and so on. About which we have a podcast, by the way, Ready Now and Ready Next. But the solution to this is you have to have both for different reasons. If you want your organization to know important information for succession planning, success of an individual, their strengths, their weaknesses, their achievement of goals, whatever, and you want that for record keeping, data gathering, potentially doing some analysis on compensation and so on, and really also to check on how well certain managers help people develop, you do performance reviews, okay? And look, you can keep the system of how you do this really simple. A small company can do fantastic performance reviews on one page. You can do them handwritten. We have detailed, elaborate guidance, some of my favorite guidance that we've ever put out, on how to create a system, how to prepare a review, how to write the review, how to deliver the review. I mean, in annoying detail. I think it's some of our most downloaded guidance of all time. So much so, we release it every year at the end of November. I would say Thanksgiving, but that's only applicable to the States. And we want you guys to be reminded about it and study up on it so you're good at it. Companies aren't training people on delivering reviews. And I can prove it. If I could do a magical survey right now, I would say, okay, if you think you've been trained on performance reviews, do you know what SEER and SUMX are? If you don't, then you have not been trained on performance reviews.
What?
So don't
what?
Write me. Sears? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's
exactly.
That? What's that?
Yeah. Don't write me and tell me your company does train you. If what you're telling me is they teach you how to log in and use their electronic performance review system, that's not the kind of training I'm talking about. That's tool training. And I'm talking about writing training and evaluation training. And so that's your system for performance reviews. But regarding feedback, companies don't actually need a system for feedback, performance feedback, because performance feedback is intended to be short, quick, in the moment, and able to be capitalized upon virtually immediately. Now, look, you're probably thinking, wait a minute, Mark, I thought you did have a feedback system. It's the, you know, the feedback model. No, there's a difference between a system that an organization requires and a model that individual managers use to deliver their feedback. And we're making a distinction here between what individual managers do and what organizations do. An organizational system of feedback would likely include measures and reporting and standardization. It would involve HR oversight. And that's just not the right approach for organizations. Hell, right now, organizations, the managers within organizations today, outside of a few rare exceptions, on a scale of 1 to 10, the level of feedback, performance communications between managers and directs is a 2 on a 10 scale. That's how bad it is. And managers tell us all the reasons why they can't. And then I've actually done this. I've gone in and then proven them wrong in front of 30 or 40 managers. So, oh, well, you know, you don't work here. That's a special case and so on. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. In fact, in the cases that I've seen where people are trying to break through is where guys say, gals say, dude, I'm just going to start giving feedback. I don't care whether anybody else hears it or not. And they're just blatant about it. In fact, you could make the case that Ray Dalio's Principles, his book about Bridgewater? Is that the name of the?
Bridgewater, I think, yeah.
Yeah, Bridgewater, the hedge fund that he runs. They're willing to break rules, break taboos about feedback just to increase the volume because they know high-performing systems are replete with feedback mechanisms. Again, we don't think you need a system. Although, if my VP, if I'm a frontline manager and my VP, my boss's boss's boss, says, we're going to use the feedback model, the managerial feedback model, and I end up using it, and all of us use it, all 50 managers in my VP's area, let's say I'm making that up, that's still not a system, okay? A system ties things together. It just means all of us have a standard protocol for delivering feedback, but a protocol for individuals to use is not a system, okay? The right approach for organizations is basically to ask, what is the outcome we want to achieve? And then basically drill down from there. Organizations are generally much better off starting with outcomes rather than with processes. Processes lead to measures, and yeah, look, measures are okay. And measures often lead to what is known as Goodhart's Law, which is when measures become targets, they cease being good measures. But in the case of feedback, what the organization wants generally is work performance that leads to productivity and higher productivity, which, as we've said before a billion times on the show, higher productivity is highly correlated to higher profitability. Or mission accomplishment if profit is not one of your measures. Okay, but if when we say work performance that leads to productivity, some people would say, well, that's development. Okay, and that's hard to measure. And you'd be right. In some firms, it could be quantitative results, easy to measure maybe, but probably not the smartest thing to apply to all roles and all situations. And frankly, at Manager Tools, we've already always had this sort of feeling that what we're talking about here now is the quantum argument in organizations today. Can you measure everything? Or is there a point at which the measures switch, like when you're measuring light from particle to wave, or the Heisenberg uncertainty principle takes over, where the moment you measure something, you change it, right? You can't know whether it's one or the other or where it is precisely because you have to put a force onto it in order to measure it. Or it's just a sort of a quantum effect.
I just love the way you're talking. Just
it's awesome. It's good. By the way, it was loosely related to management. maybe you should start a podcast on physics or atomic physics. Maybe we can get a couple of Nobel Prize winners on there.
That would be awesome. You know, it's talking funny about management. They're probably great at it.
Yeah, I don't think there's any Nobel Prize winners in management. I think that's sad. I feel that we're not treated fairly.
Feel free to nominate us, folks.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, it occurs to me, I wonder if the Nobels are under a cloud, because Alfred Nobel, who endowed the prizes, invented dynamite. I wonder whether or not there's some backlash to that. Anyway, okay. So organizations can create systems of measures, but generally speaking, those are aimed at everyone, right? There's a qualitative difference between the one in everyone and the one in me. Orgs have to be careful about that. You're not going to find a system that you expect everybody to follow precisely is going to be followed precisely. So we take the approach here that the systems of performance management in the form of annual reviews and performance development in the form of managerial behavior to help your people develop are necessary and certainly complementary and connected, but they are separate. And one of my favorite things when I'm talking to smart people, Mike, you're included, many others, but when we do a simple thought experiment going, okay, does this idea we have hold water? So we ask ourselves, could managers' feedback be easily rolled up into an organizational-wide system of tracking performance? And what I mean by that is a manager, Mike's my boss, and he says to me, hey, Mark, can I give you some feedback? When you're late on a deliverable, it slows down the project and we're going to miss our first profit marker. Can you do that better next time? So could that manager's feedback delivered verbally based on an email that Mike read 15 minutes ago be easily rolled up into an organizational-wide system for tracking performance? Well, hopefully everybody realizes the answer to that is no. Yeah, maybe 50 years from now you could do it, but it's not right now. So the point is, performance reviews give the organization a system for managing performance. And by that, I mean eliminating significantly poor performers, promoting potentially high performers. And performance communications in the form of feedback give managers a way to affect daily performance of the individuals whose productivity they're responsible for. And I don't think, just off the top of my head, I don't think any company can survive very long without both. Maybe you could get by for a while as a very small company without performance reviews, but I don't know that I'd want to. I think most employees assume, at least in first world organizations, that there's an annual salary review process based on economic factors, societal factors, success factors, and so on. I don't think you'd want to do that for very long without providing some sort of performance communication associated with it. But, I mean, it's not purely black and white. But as a general rule, we don't believe that any company bigger than 100 people will be nearly as effective surviving without both systems, a performance management system and a performance development system. And the performance development system is largely ensconced, imbued in the manager. Okay. A company without succession planning is probably going to wither from lack of leadership because good people are going to leave if they're always passed over because we hire outsiders. And a company without managers providing performance communications to their people will become less and less profitable over time because their people don't improve and you're going to have to hire more and more people to get more and more done. And the more people you hire, the more internal friction there is. And so there's no way you can hire more people on some sort of path that's linearly related to your growth path and not create so much internal friction that you begin to have a negative effect on the profitability or success of the organization. That's just the law of large numbers, I think. So that's it. You got to have both.
That was well articulated, dude. I like that.
Good. And I threw in a Heisenberg and a Nobel.
You going to win a Heisenberg? Okay.
No. Okay. I brought it up as in, you know, I mean, I like that stuff. I read Surely You're Joking, Mr. Feynman, one of the funniest books I ever read. He fixes radios by thinking.
I thought you were going to win a Heisenberg because nobody knows what the hell you're going to say at any given point in time.
Okay. Yeah, well. Well, I'm going to totally zing you back by saying, dude, you can't win a Heisenberg. It's a principle. It's not a prize.
Yeah, it's a new award. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, okay. It's a new award. Okay,
good. Yeah.
Unfortunately, many of us still don't know when we'll be able to go back to the office. And while Manager Tools is always optimistic, we're conservative in nature and plan accordingly, which is why we're still working to make every manager effective and every professional productive through virtual training instead. For our client organizations, we'll work with a group of up to 30 individuals with our effective manager and now also our effective communicator client sessions. Pricing's more affordable than when we come on site, and we've found a way for interaction, practice, and just as rich a benefit. Contact us by emailing Maggie at maggie@manager-tools.com for more information.
I think the beginning of the podcast looked pretty good. No sides, no rabbit holes. We're good.
Yeah, no.
I just totally screwed that up. Sorry, guys. Okay, next point. Feedback isn't a fallacy.
Okay, yeah, we're switching gears here. And I think when I look at the length of the show notes, we're gonna have to break it in here somewhere, partner. So you're gonna have to decide when we do that. But the first article, the first bit came out of that, should you conduct formal performance reviews? That's where all that came from. And then when I started realizing how frustrated I was with this, what's the word, putting these two, the juxtaposition of performance reviews and feedback and people not understanding that they're connected, but they're not either or. Then I got really excited. I said, well, that reminds me of this other article, which just
Marcus Buckingham you're talking about, right?
Yeah. I carried this article around for a year. I had it in my briefcase. I was sitting on my desk. And I'm kind of glad I did because it just kept poking me. It's called the feedback fallacy. And it is by Marcus Buckingham, a very well-regarded guy I like. In the March 2019 issue of Harvard Business Review. And I admire his work. His book, Break All the Rules, is quite good. The Strengths Finder instrument, I think he had some input into, and I generally like it. I don't love it, but I generally like it. But I've been sitting here for last year saying, I should write a letter to the editor, because this article ticks me off. And then I realized something. I was going to write a letter to the editor, and probably I'm not fancy enough for HBR, and it might not get published, and I would have spent hours on it. And then I realized maybe doing it in a podcast and educating everybody, this is a different cast than we normally would do. This might be useful. Look, HBR has an audience. I think their circulation is about 250,000. But if you assume that only half of the people read the letters, and I think that might be, I've never read the letters to the editor in Harvard Business Review, and I've been reading it every year, every quarter, every month, every time it comes out for years, 15, 20, 25 years. So this cast might reach more people than this, the letter to the editor, although it won't have the impact, maybe. Trying to get Mr. Buckingham's attention and say, shame on you, sir. This is terrible. This is not up to your other standards. But look, I found the article really dismaying. And again, I know I've mentioned it before in things I think, but I wanted to explicate it at some level here for a good bit of time. So herewith, a detailed critique of the misapprehensions and poor guidance contained in the feedback fallacy written by a really good guy, Marcus Buckingham. The purpose of this cast, guys, is to arm you against those other managers who think they know what feedback is and how it doesn't work because they're biased based on exposure to this article. When HR managers speak up and say that, well, we're not sure that feedback is the right thing for our people, maybe we should be pursuing management actions that help them, quote, thrive, unquote, and don't cause such, quote, anxiety, unquote. These are people who have become attuned to this article, and this article is terribly misleading for the average manager. I'm quite certain it might impress a bunch of CEOs enough that they'll hire Mr. Buckingham, and well, that's all well and good. But look, this article is, in my opinion, destructive. It suggests, the author suggests that feedback, even if done right, is misguided. They suggest we should be asking not how we can correct mistakes. By the way, they talk about feedback, but they begin a pattern here at the beginning of the article of seeing feedback as only negative. Mistakes being feedback, feedback being mistakes. It's like a synecdoche. It's just not, it's anyway. But rather, they say, no, you shouldn't be doing feedback. You should be asking, how can we help each person thrive and excel? They go on to say, quoting now, telling people what we think of their performance doesn't help them thrive and excel. And telling people how we think they should improve actually hinders their learning.
Okay.
I just got to tell you, I mean, maybe we're supposed to write articles like this to further our careers and be provocative and be partially true, but just scare the pants off of people and say, I want to take the entire world in a new direction. Look, guys, the idea that feedback is somehow counter to thriving, excelling is ludicrous, okay? Look, I want as much as anybody else for employees, for directs of mine to thrive and excel. But I want them to thrive and excel toward the goals of the organization and what the organization is trying to achieve. A direct who feels he is thriving and excelling and it tells his boss that, while he is not achieving reasonable goals that the organization hired him to achieve, cannot be seen to be thriving and excelling in the context of an organization, and the organization's context outranks the individual's context. I'm not suggesting the organization is more important than the individual. The organization is more important than the individual when the individual has freely chosen to be a part of the organization, because there's more people in the organization than there is in the individual. It's many to one. Okay? So if somebody says, I'm thriving and excelling, I really feel like I'm learning and growing and so on. And at the end of the year, after telling everybody, I want you to thrive, I want you to excel, you know, totally, that's what we want. And at the end of the year, when you don't achieve any of his goals, what do you say? Hey, you knocked it out of the park this year, dude. Thrive and excel, 100% big raise. No, I don't think any organization's going to do that. The employee that thrives and excels but doesn't achieve his or her goals must be asked to change his behavior to help the organization thrive and excel, even if he must go through a period of stress and difficulty and anxiety and discomfort. I respect that he might be emotionally distraught. Yes, I've been emotionally distraught, not to the point of tears, maybe a few times in my career. I've been stressed. I've been asked to do difficult things. I felt stress. I felt anxiety. I felt fear of failure. Our job is not to protect employees from fear of failure. Our job is not even to protect employees from failure. Heck, if that's the case, all this stuff about encouraging people to take risks is just bloviating, okay? We can't allow people to say, I want to thrive and excel, even if it doesn't align with organizational goals, okay? So if the employee isn't achieving what he or she is supposed to do, but they say they're thriving and excelling, we have to ask them to thrive and excel differently. And he's going to feel uncomfortable during that time. He will not feel like he's thriving and excelling. And to me, that right there, that simple thought experience proves it's not our job to help him thrive and excel. In fact, I would argue that using phrases like thrive and excel allows Mr. Buckingham, who I honestly think is much smarter than me and clearly a lot more successful, I think he's using it to change the narrative toward one of social sciences or educational theory rather than organizational theory. I think there's a growing sense in large organizations that we need to see ourselves much more broadly. Unfortunately, guys, society's the definition of society in modern terms includes the idea of organizations. Organizations play a noteworthy role in society. If you join an organization, you give up some of your free speech rights, some of your individual freedoms, in return for the magic that is the multiplication of human potential, of human productivity. 150,000 people on their own couldn't produce iPhones and iPads and everything Apple does. I see 150. I think that's how many people Apple has. I could be wrong. You couldn't do that on your own. But together, by agreeing to align ourselves with one another and agreeing on common goals, the organization can thrive and excel, even if parts of the organization don't necessarily feel like they're thriving and excelling. In fact, they feel like they're working their tails off and they just need a couple of days off because they've been so busy. There's an entire conceptual law called the law of suboptimization. If you want to optimize the entire organization, you have to suboptimize everything else. If you want to optimize a part of the organization, say the individual, through thriving and excelling, you're going to suboptimize the organization. Well, unfortunately, if the organization becomes sufficiently suboptimized, the organization no longer exists to allow the individual to thrive and excel. Look, the authors go on in the article to suggest that the organizational world is presently besieged by a mistaken belief, and I'm quoting here, that the way to increase performance is through rigorous, frequent, candid, pervasive, and often critical feedback. This really ticks me off. You know what? The scholarship in this is crap. Okay? What they are doing, they're just making up these straw men and saying, look, I'm going to put a bunch of words in your mouth, and I'm going to tell you how stupid you are. Yeah. Go ahead. I didn't say any of those words you put in my mouth. Look, he starts off with some sleight of hand that helps his argument, but again, is misleading and wrong. He says that there is a current convention that feedback is an unalloyed good. Guys, this is not true. It's a false statement. If it were, in fact, if feedback were an unalloyed good, virtually every manager we know would be delivering feedback. And the vast majority of managers don't. How can you say X is good, nobody does X, but the conventional wisdom is X is good? No, I got to tell you, if nobody's doing X, X isn't good. And it's certainly not an unalloyed good. Nice word, by the way. Now, look, before we discuss the straw man that Buckingham essentially creates out of these errors he's making, I mean, look, guys, it's entirely possible that Mr. Buckingham could argue against my critique by citing a disagreement about what feedback actually is. We could get into the definition of what is. And look, I doubt any of our audience would read the article and not believe that the authors of this article I'm talking about think that feedback really means negative feedback. I don't think there's a single instance where he makes a distinction between positive and negative feedback. I don't. At one point, he suggests that managers should interrupt directs in the middle of a presentation in front of other people where they're doing something good and tell them, yes, do that. I'm sorry, at what point do we become untethered from reality? This is incomprehensible to me. I mean, what? Imagine that. Your direct is presenting to a customer, and you go, ooh, that was good. Do more of that, please. And the customer looks and goes, are we getting presented to? Or are you coaching? Or do we're going to have to sit here and listen to you interrupt her when she does good and bad things in the future? Now, when he does recommend what might be considered, shall we say, positive performance communications, it is not what he calls feedback, but something else. We have no doubt anyone on the receiving end of what he would agree is not feedback would say later, I just got feedback. But to be honest, that's kind of an academic argument, and we're not much for those. Because look, guys, management is not an academic pursuit. But we do think it's silly for a professional to say that feedback can only mean negative feedback, when the theory of feedback, one of the first thing it says in the first paragraph is it can be positive or negative. But hey, anything can change. It's Orwellian. This thing is Orwellian. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to keep going. So the author straw man supporting their assertion regarding feedback's unalloyed goodness, again, that word, starts this way. Quote, there are three theories that we in the business world commonly accept as truths. And I think you're going to see here as we walk through this, the straw man they create, which is easy to puncture. Heck, if I wanted to make it easy on myself to convince everybody how right I was, I would just come up with a really bad straw man that maybe nobody would notice was bad. You'll see that the straw man is false because we know lots of people who absolutely do not think any of these things in any way, shape, or form. I don't get it.
And we're running out of time, dude.
No, you can't. No, I'm just totally getting started.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. Okay, look, guys, I apologize for this because I know this is a little bit off the beaten track. But, you know, we've been doing podcasts now for 15 years. And every single time I've said to Mike, let's try something 5%, 10% different, I've gotten 100 notes saying, wow, that was so cool. Now, I think if I was doing something creative, cool, and different, and we didn't have 1,250 or 1,300 or 1,500, however many podcasts we have that were down in the weeds, actionable, specific, so on, you know, you probably wouldn't tolerate this. But I see this as an actionable cast because somebody has to stand up right now in the world today. And when somebody in HR or somebody else, well-intentioned, smart people, good people, say, yeah, we need to talk about the feedback and the performance review system, you can say, no, guys, those are you're mixing apples and tambourines. They're not the same thing. They don't even relate to one another, only in the most broad sense. Feedback is an individual pursuit. Performance reviews are a succession planning effort. And I want you to know what the state of the management theory and science world is based on popular stuff like HBR, which I love, by the way. So we'll continue this and I will continue to, I don't know, what's the word? Bloviate maybe?
Or poke Mr.
No, I know. I'm going to be fulsome.
Fulsome. Oh my God. Let's don't go there. Hey, but the great thing about this is there's enough time, Mr. Buckingham, to give us a call and
you can
solve this problem before we tell everybody why you're wrong. You could call us and tell us why we're not.
Mr. Buckingham, M.A. Horstman, Horstman, at manager-tools.com. And by the way, guys, we know he knows about us and we'll reveal why next week.
Yeah. And to be clear, buddy, we have a lot of respect for this gentleman.
Dude.
A lot of respect. So
I would totally hang out with him. I would buy him dinner. I would ask him a billion questions. Yeah, totally.
This is all tongue-in-cheek, folks. Just yeah. So you know. All right. Folks, we will finish this up next week. You'll enjoy it.
Yeah, good.
Have a great one. So long.